Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. You're about to listen to a historical episode of Dark Poutine. After episode 149, you will find Scott is no longer with the show. In an effort to maintain continuity and offer listeners as many episodes as possible, we are leaving the episodes in which he co-hosted intact. Thank you.
Well, those loons sounded festive.
Well, they're festive loons, that's why.
Welcome to Dark Poutine. I'm Mike Brown, creator and host. With me, as usual, is my good friend and co-host, Scott Santa Claus Hemingway.
Oh, I'm nowhere near Santa Claus levels.
Well, you're sounding a little better this week than you were last.
I am sounding a little better, but I think that's going to disappoint a lot of the listeners.
Yeah, because they were saying they liked your sexy, snotty voice.
Yeah, I was going back to Urkel now.
Yeah, we're going to have to change your name from Scott to Snot.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during the Dark Poutine podcast are solely those of the producer and do not necessarily represent those of Curious Cast, its affiliate Global News, nor their parent company, Chorus Entertainment.
Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish. Listener discretion is strongly advised. We're not experts on the topics we present, nor are we journalists. We're two ordinary Canadians chatting about crime and the dark side of history. Let's get to it. Put on your Santa hat, grab yourself an eggnog, and an Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some dark poutine. Santa hat.
That's a good call. It's a good audible.
It's very tookie.
Yeah. Well, literally.
And you can have a double-double with an eggnog.
Can you?
Sure, you can have some eggnog. Double eggnog shot. Nonsense thing.
So are you an eggnog fan?
One of those
fan?
Coffee.
Because it's contentious topic.
I do. I like eggnog.
Me too. I love eggnog.
Yeah, there you go.
I always...
Finally, something we agree on.
Yeah, right? I always overestimate how much I like it, though, and I'll be like, yeah, eggnog, and I'll pour like a giant glass of it, and I'll get like one third through, and I'm like, no, I'm good.
I feel sick to my tummy.
Yeah, because it's just so heavy. It's like you're drinking molasses.
Or the lactose takes charge, and then you got to go twosies.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much in and out.
Yep. Oh, boy.
But I love eggnog.
Yeah, it is good.
Yeah.
So this is episode 105, and if you haven't gathered by our festive
loons
and the way we're speaking, it's our third holiday special. I can't believe this is our third one.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. Well, I guess timing of when we started the show,
but still,
came early, but it's still crazy that we've got.
So it's more than 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Behooving.
Oh, God, that again. So our coverage of this particular case has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
We've been planning it since our first holiday special, actually.
I remember.
But only now do we feel ready to cover this harrowing case.
It's a pretty heavy one, man.
Like,
this isn't your fluffy little fun and game show.
As it takes place in Los Angeles, though, this holiday episode will also be an away game.
Yeah. Yeah, so, which is good for the folks to recognize.
Yeah, it's our first holiday away game.
Yeah.
On Christmas Eve in 1988, led by German-born criminal mastermind Hans Gruber, a band of well-organized gunmen armed to the teeth with high-tech weaponry violently took over the Nakatomi Plaza skyscraper.
Yeah, I remember.
Posing as terrorists, Gruber and his cronies attempted to rob the corporation of $640 million in bearer bonds stored in the vault in the vice chairman's suite on the 31st floor.
That is a lot of money.
It is a lot. Well, today it would be well over $2 billion.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. They might have gotten away with their heist were it not for the heroics of one man who took it upon himself to foil their plans. That man is the husband of Nakatomi executive Holly Gennaro and New York City police officer John McClane.
Yeah, I remember this case very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the Nakatomi Plaza incident.
Yeah.
It was in the news a lot for for quite some time. There was an inquest afterward to determine, you know, whether or not there was a lot of killing actually that went on.
Well, yeah, exactly. And how could this be prevented moving forward? You know,
what went wrong?
What can we learn from these?
There were a lot of things that went wrong here. Yeah. And so we'll highlight some of those as we go on.
Yeah.
The research for this episode comes from eyewitness accounts, including the hero himself, Los Angeles police reports, and multiple news reports, as well as that inquest. The paper is probably 700 to 800 pages long.
Yeah, I can imagine. It actually seems shorter than what I would think. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. John McClane, the hero of this story, is a beat cop from New York. He and his wife, Holly, had been having marital troubles the months prior to Christmas.
Oh, jeez.
It was rumored he had a wandering eye and may have been disloyal to Holly at some point, and she was aware of his infidelities. Now, I'm not sure I could corroborate those things.
I remember that being a very strong rumor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holly'd been working her way up the ranks at the Nakatomi Corporation in New York, and after she was offered a position assisting Vice Chairman Takagi in Los Angeles, Holly pulled up stakes and brought the couple's two children, Lucy 6 and John Jack Jr., out west with her. Holly was doing so well that Takagi had presented her with a gold Rolex as her Christmas bonus.
Yeah, that's like a salary right there.
Exactly. So you know she was doing well.
Yeah.
And she was proudly wearing this watch on the night of the party.
Must have been a really tough one, John, though, being away from his kids and everybody.
Well, yeah, for sure. And this is why he was coming to Los Angeles. He wanted to see the kids.
Yeah.
But he also had hopes of reconciling with Holly.
I can understand. When you've got family and everything, sure.
And so he was invited to come to the Nakatomi Christmas party there at the plaza on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
But he was late to the party. He'd been picked up at the airport and brought to the plaza by a limo driver named Argyle.
Mm-hmm.
And Argyle had been hired by the Nakatomi Corporation. And John explained what was going on between he and his wife as they were driving.
Yeah.
He wanted to surprise her with a limo ride home. So he asked Argyle, hey, can you wait around?
Yeah.
And so Argyle decided he would do that.
Argyle's a pretty damn good driver by the sounds of it. Very, very willing to...
Well, this was his first limo job.
I remember hearing
he was actually a cab driver before this, so...
Yeah, that slipped my mind. I forgot.
So Argyle decided he would wait in the parking garage below the building, and he'd listen to some loud music and chat with his girlfriend on the car phone. And he also discovered that there was a minibar in the backseat of the limo.
So
he availed himself of some of the drinky poos.
Well, I mean, you've got many an hour to wait.
Right? What else are you going to do?
You're in a limo.
Exactly.
Enjoy said limo.
Yeah. And especially it's your first time. Whatever. Right? Who cares?
Yeah. Drinking on the job, he could get himself in a lot of trouble.
Well, he wasn't technically working. He was only hired to bring John there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, he was doing a favor.
It's still a bold move, but I've got Argyle's back.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been drinking and driving, though.
No.
This is also a concern.
Yeah, exactly.
Nakatomi Plaza is an impressive steel and glass 34-story, 493-foot skyscraper in Century City in Los Angeles. And it's at 2121 Avenue of the Stars.
Is that an actual street?
That is. That is where it is.
Hmm.
It's the headquarters, the California division of Nakatomi Investment Group, a wealthy Japanese corporation with billions of dollars of assets and investments worldwide. Construction on the building commenced in 1985 and Nakatomi Plaza opened in 1987, a year before the events it's most known for. A number of floors and a couple of the elevator shafts were still under construction when this incident took place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that is correct.
Gruber's meticulous scouting of the Nakatomi Corporation's security system and building floor plans, utilizing a still unknown insider and a skilled hacker, allowed him to plan the technical portion of the heist. So it is very much considered that Gruber had someone on the inside of the Nakatomi Corporation who was helping him out.
Yeah, I always thought that person was found. They never found out who it was.
They never found out who it was.
jeez, that guy or girl must be counting their lucky stars.
Maybe they were there at the party that night. Nobody really knows.
Probably living in the Bahamas now, just got the F out.
Who know? Well, you would think anybody who just kind of disappeared afterward would be.
I bet you the police have an idea. But anyways, I digress.
Evidence is tough.
Yeah.
Gruber chose the evening of December 24th as the target date for the heist, as the building's highly trained security staff would be just a skeleton crew with most of them on leave for the holidays.
That makes sense.
And he was also well aware that Nakatomi corporate Christmas party was being held there on the 30th floor, and that the employees who remained to celebrate would be caught off guard, full of alcohol and other forms of holiday cheer. It was the 80s, after all.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, so there was
probably coming out
of
the faucets.
A little bit of the old nose candy going on there.
And I can, you know, I mean, that, not trying to speak highly of a terrible person, but Gruber did do his research. I mean, I see the logic in his planning.
Well, he actually was a member of a German freedom fighting group called the Volksfrei for a time, but he was kicked out of that.
Of them.
Yeah. He was kicked out of that group for being too violent.
Well, I mean, look at what's happening. So,
well,
okay.
This is much after he was booted out of that group. So.
Oh, really? I didn't realize how much time had passed.
Yeah. Just after 7 p.m. on Christmas Eve, security footage recovered at the scene shows a 5-ton truck and a Mercedes sedan entering the courtyard of Nakatomi Plaza.
Hmm.
The truck took the ramp into the parking garage as the Mercedes parked near the front of the building. Gruber and a group of heavily armed men piled out of the back of the truck in the parking garage, dragging guns and heavy wooden crates with them.
I remember afterwards seeing footage of that.
Mm-hmm.
Security footage, and it was pretty terrifying.
It is terrifying. You think, wow, these guys are really, they've come to make a mess.
Yeah, I mean, like coming out with guns, like you know that shit's going to go down. It's not like they kind of, well, let's just try to be on the sly. And, you know, no, that was like a terrifying sight.
The two men who were in the car quickly entered the front lobby of the building, and they distracted and then killed the two security guards on the ground floor, securing the scene.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, these guys, they've got everything figured. They're just coming out. They're not here to negotiate. Pew, pew.
Well, I thought you'd be a little more upset that two security guards have died.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, these guys are not, but they're just like...
Yeah, like, yeah, so there's just, these two gentlemen who probably have families.
It's Christmas
Eve. Have been dispatched
Eve.
With on Christmas Eve. So moving forward, their families are going to have to deal with the fact that their sons, brothers, fathers had been murdered.
What should be the most joyous time of the year is now marred with this event. And this complete disregard. Like, you come in and you kill.
Absolutely. Gruber and some of the gunmen and the group's hacker, whose name was Theo, made their way to the 30th floor toward their target. Three others took crates to the upper unfinished mechanical floors of the building. One of the bad guys, dressed in a security officer's uniform, was installed at the guard desk to keep up appearances.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The bad guys all used CB radios to communicate between floors on the groups on the different floors.
Yeah.
There was no cell phones at the time, so
not like we have now. You might have had a Motorola brick and whatnot back then, but no, nowhere near.
This is much more sophisticated.
Yes.
This was as highly sophisticated as they could be,
absolutely,
considering the technology that they had at the time.
Yeah,
it was pretty fascinating to. Gruber and his group exited the elevator and began firing into the air, sending people diving under furniture and screaming in fright.
Yeah, this guy is just a piece of work.
Can you imagine? Like, you're just at your Christmas party and some dickhead, a bunch of dickheads just burst in and start firing their weapon.
You're just having some fun, dipping your nose in some candy, and the next thing you know, like gunfire. Like, you can just see how terrible this Gruber guy is, because he's not coming in and giving people a chance.
No.
It's just...
Yeah.
That's your entry.
But that's the thing. Shooting. These guys want to get control right away. So you got to freak people out as much as you can. This is what he's... I'm sure what he's thinking.
This is how a psychopath would think, sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
John McClane, who I mentioned was late for the party, he was changing for the party in another room, so a back office kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he'd stripped down to his undershirt and he'd taken off his shoes and socks.
Oh.
When McClane overheard the automatic gunfire and ensuing mayhem, he grabbed his service weapon, a Beretta 92F, out of his holster that he'd hung on a door nearby.
Yeah, classic New York officer, always got his weapon with him, ready to go.
I have problems with that because I'm wondering how he brought his gun from New York. Apparently he had it with him on the plane.
It was the 80s, Mike.
Yeah, I guess it's before 9/11.
I could walk onto an airplane in the 80s with a sword and nobody would have given a hoot.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think that those were times.
But security's so tight now.
Oh.
You know, like this kind of thing. He had a weapon with him, which, you know, will come into play later on. But think about it, this happening now. Security is so tight, he wouldn't have that weapon with him.
Mike, I can't bring a full container of gel on my airplane.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Let alone a weapon of any kind.
So rather than face these really well-armed gunmen head-on, mm-hmm. John made a decision to escape and try to better assess his options. So he found his way into a stairwell.
Oh.
And sadly, in all the excitement, he had to leave so quickly he was unable to put his socks and shoes back on. So he was barefoot from this point on.
But you can really see that officer instinct in him.
Like, yeah.
It's instant, like, grab the gun, I need to,
see what we get a good assessment of the situation.
Exactly, yep. Exactly. That's a well-trained officer.
Overhearing noise on an empty mechanical floor, John carefully opened the door and snuck up on some of the bad guys.
Oh, jeez.
He was watching them unpack the wooden crates that they dragged from the truck.
Yeah.
There were guns, rocket launchers, and explosives inside.
Shit, imagine seeing that. You're Mr. McClane, and you're just like...
Yeah. You're just like, happening? I've been pulling people over for, you know...
Yeah, traffic violations.
Chasing maybe a kid for stealing from a store.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. I'm sure he had a lot more.
It was New York.
Yeah. But, it had to be...
But still, to stumble across this... And remember, he's like, he's recognizing his wife is there. His wife is in the area. That
the mother of his children.
Yeah, that the gunfire erupted from.
Yeah. And so he's got to be thinking, oh my God, I wonder if she's okay.
Yeah, and then you're seeing fucking rocket launchers?
Mm-hmm. So two of these bad guys began to set explosives around the upper floors of the tower as McClane headed back to the stairwell to a lower floor.
Yeah.
Gruber stepped to the front of the group and began his freedom fighter terrorist spiel.
Oh, God.
Meant to hide his true agenda, the heist.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the Nakatomi Corporation's legacy of greed around the globe, they're about to be taught a lesson in the use of power. You will be witnesses.
Gruber then picked the vice chairman, Joseph Yashinobu Takagi, out of the crowd of revelers.
Oh, so he knew. Well,
He had to do some walking around the crowd and try and figure out who he was. With an armed escort and the hacker, Gruber dragged Takagi into the elevator and up to the executive office suite where the money is in this vault.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, he's done his homework. He knows where the money is.
Yeah. No. As much as I loathe the man, he's done his work.
I'm wondering who the insider is. It bothers me throughout this.
Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. The more we talk about it, the more it bothers me.
Because there's somebody who is free today.
Yeah, who essentially facilitated this.
Exactly.
Completely facilitated this. Knew that he might not have known the violence that would ensue, but he or she knew effing people's lives up.
So in the meantime, John McClane made his way up the stairs and ended up in the same suite as the vice chairman's office trying to figure out his next moves.
Oh, wow.
He didn't know the bad guys were coming until he heard the elevator doors open and he hid.
Yeah.
Sort of in an adjoining room with like a glass window so he could see and sort of hear what they were talking about. He thought it better that he'd do that because, again, he's outgunned.
Yeah.
And he needs to figure out what he's dealing with.
Yeah, for sure.
Theo the hacker set to work on Takagi's computer, and Gruber asked Takagi for the passcode. Hans and Takagi were sitting facing each other at Takagi's desk, and of course Gruber's got the power position sitting in Takagi's seat.
Of course, yeah.
You know, what a dirtbag.
Yeah.
Takagi was confused at the request for the passcode. He was wondering, are these guys here for the computer? What are they really here for?
Yeah, because he announced when he started shooting, like, this is about a power.
Right. Gruber then owned up to Takagi that he was after the money, not computer access.
Okay.
And Takagi told Gruber that he didn't have the code anyway, that there were 7 safeguards on the vault and the code was only the first step.
Mm.
At this point, Gruber took out his pistol, leveled it, and coldly fired a single shot at the unarmed man. The 9mm bullet tore through Takagi's head, killing the 41-year-old father of 5 instantly.
Yeah, I remember the debate and dialogue surrounding that because, you know, there's a lot of people who hate corporate entities.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, who cares if it was, it's just one of the, just taking down the man and stuff.
No, well, he's a human being.
I know, I'm on your side. I was actually quite appalled by the debate of how anybody could, like, find pleasure in the fact that this individual was taken out. Because, again, family.
And the way he was, just like, boom.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, yeah. And not every CEO or owner of a corporation is a terrible person.
And can you imagine John McClane watching from the other room, not able to do anything?
Just trying to figure out what the hell is happening.
Yeah.
How serious is this? Yeah. Should I be concerned about my wife? Shouldn't I? When you see that, you just know.
So he scampered out a back stairwell into a darkened mechanical floor where he pulled the fire alarm, hoping to alert the authorities.
Smart.
This is
a smart move, McClane.
He would later beat himself up for being unable to help Takagi, but he has since come to terms with his choice not to take action.
Yeah.
I mean, he realizes he wouldn't have lived to tell the tale and the bad guys might have escaped.
Yeah, and, you know, we all have the... we can all now think back and remember of the outcome and know how things turn out. But in that moment and soon afterwards, I can understand his emotion and the frustration with himself.
Well, he'd be no help to his wife and her coworkers if he was dead anyway.
No, the outcome could have been completely different.
Yeah. Thanks to the alarm, though, the bad guys now knew that they had someone else in the building there.
Mm-hmm.
The security board alerted them to his location.
Oh.
You know how...
I wasn't aware,
Well, I used to work security.
Yeah,
if an alarm goes off in a building...
And you'll know where it was pulled?
You would know exactly where it was.
Oh my God, I did not know this.
So the bad guy at the security desk called 911 to report a false alarm, and another man was sent to check the floor that the alarm came from.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah.
I often wondered why the... police didn't. In my mind, I thought, well, why didn't the police come? But I guess they...
We'll get into that.
Yeah.
Most likely the reason that only one man was sent to find the person who'd pulled the alarm was that the bad guys assumed it was an unarmed party guest who'd set off...
Panicked.
Set it off. And not a New York City police officer with his 9mm sidearm.
Yeah, no, I totally make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So Theo, the hacker, quickly cracked the password, which opened the first lock.
Oh, wow.
And then he set about bypassing the next 5 locks, which required a sophisticated drilling rig.
Oh, now it's making more sense for that truck.
Yeah.
5-ton truck.
Exactly. All the crates.
Yeah.
Mysterious Theo was also a talented safecracker as well as a hacker. So that's pretty interesting. He's a pretty talented individual.
It's quite the skill set he's got.
He was concerned about the final electronic lock, which he knew he couldn't crack. But Gruber had plans for that, though. Theo just had to get through the others as fast as he could.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. John McClane watched out of the window as the fire trucks approached the building and then turned around and left.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Yeah. Because, you know, they've been called off by the guy who calls 911.
Well, and that's where I got tricked up because I wasn't really aware, or I forgot anyways, that call was made.
But here's the thing.
Mm.
I know now that fire department policy is if an alarm is pulled, you show up and go up to the site of the alarm to determine where that is. Now, that may not have been the policy for the Los Angeles Fire Department at the time.
Yep.
Maybe this is the event that actually precipitated
that. You know, I'm going to say that it is quite probable.
Yeah.
It's quite probable because, I would imagine after the investigating done after the crime, like there's something like this would be something implemented in new policies and procedures.
Totally.
So, yeah, makes sense.
So McClane, he was cursing the firemen when he heard the elevator doors open. He wants them to come on.
Oh, like, my God. Imagine you're him. You're thinking, here comes some salvation.
Yep. And it's going away.
Nope.
As the elevator doors opened, he hid and got the jump on the gunman who was carrying an automatic Heckler & Koch 9mm MP5 submachine gun and a heavy duffel bag over his shoulder.
It just sounds terrifying.
Yeah. So the two men fought. There was gunfire, but no one was hit. McLean and the bad guy ended up fighting at the top of a stairwell, and when they tumbled down the stairs, John McLean landed heavily on top of the other man, breaking his neck and killing him instantly.
What an interesting death. Like, you know, when you've got two strong individuals fighting it out with guns involved, you would think that somebody's going to get shot.
Nope. No. Nobody got shot, but although there was gunfire, they're both trying to get at each other. Yeah.
How composed is John McClane? Because this has just got to be like just the
well,
most
he
terrifying.
Seemed to be in what I've read.
Yeah.
Is especially in his autobiography.
Yeah.
He seemed really terrified at the time.
Yeah. But I guess that's where the difference between officers and regular mortals like us
or trained people. People who are just, you react in the moment.
And, because that's what they, that's the training is to go on autopilot and follow the steps that you were trained.
So McLean tried on the dead bad guy's shoes and they didn't fit.
Oh, I forgot he didn't have shoes on.
No. Well, this is the thing. He's got no shoes on, but he picked up the man's submachine gun, radio, and duffel bag.
But those aren't shoes. You can't put those on your feet.
No, but he's going to use the machine gun.
Oh, okay.
Inside the bag, as well as... Jesus. Inside the bag, as well as multiple clips for the MP5, he found a Zippo lighter.
Oh.
That's going to come in handy at some
point, I'm sure.
At this point,
it's like a video game. Just loot the body, take what might be useful.
To taunt the remaining bad guys, John McLean used a red Sharpie he'd found to write on the dead man's sweatshirt.
Oh, my God.
McLean sat the corpse in an office chair and put him in the elevator, like tying him into the office chair.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He fitted a Santa hat on his head that he'd found on a decorative display nearby. Then he pushed the button to send the elevator back to the 30th floor where the party was.
You've got to not know this.
This is
Did this come from the autobiography?
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy things in that.
Holy shit.
Hans Gruber was...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Hans Gruber was informing partygoers that Takagi was dead when the elevator doors opened. One of the women screamed when she saw the dead man seated inside, and as McLean watched from above through a grate in the roof of the elevator, Hans Gruber reads the message from John. It said, "Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho."
Okay. Like, I know I shouldn't laugh because the people are dead, but... And that's like, that's who I wish I could be.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I think everybody has a wish that they could be that kind of, have that sort of coolness about them.
I'd be trying to extricate the feces from my underwear right around this point. Not no, like coming up with
I'd
like,
be out the door.
Yeah. You're not coming up with like, yo, ho, ho.
See you later.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So Holly was smirking. She knew that it was her husband who was responsible for this. Holly's co-worker, Ellis Lowe, he'd been snorting coke all night and hitting on Holly before John's arrival. He was not as impressed. Ellis thought that John's antics would get them killed, and he was very vocal about it to Holly. So this Ellis guy.
Yeah, so what about him? Who is this?
Apparently he was one of the executives there who...
Because he's sounding like a douche.
Oh, he was like... apparently quite a douchebag.
So I bet you, I'm gonna go on a limb here. I bet you this is the kind of guy who got into his position by kissing ass.
I don't know, but maybe we shouldn't be so hard on this guy.
I know, but...
Because we'll see later on what happens.
Okay.
Now, Gruber is livid that this one of his men is dead.
For sure.
And he speaks angrily in German with the other bad guys. And John also was above them, using his Sharpie to count the number of bad guys on his arm.
Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah, so he was writing down, like, so he'd crossed out one, obviously, because he'd already killed one.
Yeah.
But,
he's pretty much Rambo.
Yeah. The dead man was dragged out of the elevator, and Gruber called for another bad guy named Carl, who happened to be the dead man's brother.
Oh, man, that's not who you want coming chasing after you.
No. Yeah, so, Carl had been up setting the explosives on the other floors, and finds out his brother is dead.
Holy jeez.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
I mean, I guess...
So he's angry now.
There's a part of you that's got to like, well, it kind of comes with the territory of the work we do, but still.
Yeah.
That's gonna set you off.
The elevator that McLean was on top of went up as Carl came down in the second one.
And okay.
Carl, once he got down there and Gruber told him what was going on, he really wanted blood.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, know? That's what I'm saying.
He wanted
to
go after McLean right away, but Gruber had to, you know, tell him to chill a little bit.
Oh, man.
John McLean made his way to the roof, where he switched his radio to an emergency hailing frequency and called for help. Again, a reminder, this man is in his bare feet.
I keep forgetting.
And he's running around like, if you've ever been on the roof of a building.
I have. It's not linoleum.
No, it's not nice shag rug or anything.
It's usually quite rough and full of glued stones.
Yes, exactly.
Pebbles and stuff to keep, so there's good traction.
Well, there's a helipad up there, so there would be that. But then there's metal and all kinds of, and I'm sure the guy was stubbing his toes.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I know it's L.A., but it's Christmas Eve.
There's a chill.
It's going to be chilly.
It's chilly.
It's going to be chilly on your little tootsies.
So transcriptions from the radio dispatch center in L.A. paint a picture of a terrified and frustrated John McLean. Mm. And he said, "Mayday, mayday, anyone. Terrorists have seized the Nakatomi building and are holding 30 or more hostages. I say again, unknown number of terrorists, 6 or more, armed with automatic weapons at Nakatomi, Century City. Somebody answer me, God damn it."
That's frustration.
Right? Yeah, but the dispatch supervisor answered John saying, "Attention, whoever you are, this channel is reserved for emergency calls only." And McLean...
That sounded kind of like an emergency call to me.
Well, he cut off the dispatcher saying, "No fucking shit, lady, do I sound like I'm ordering a pizza?"
Now, imagine, Mike, imagine that call coming out now.
Yeah.
Like, things would be treated far, far differently.
Yeah. And honestly, though, McLean wasn't maintaining proper radio protocol.
No.
He was cursing and swearing.
Yes.
And, you know, but you catch more flies with honey.
He just killed somebody in a stairwell.
True. So he's amped up.
Yeah. He's watched another... guy get shot.
Right.
He's at this point, the man just wants, like...
I'm sure that the reaction by the supervisor and the other dispatchers was taken into consideration in the inquest.
Yeah, I would
probably hope some things had to change. Yeah. I mean, like I said, it was a 700 to 800 page document. Yeah, I didn't really notice anything because there were other more story driven things that I really wanted to glean from that.
Yeah, I didn't notice any of that either when I didn't read it.
Right. In response, a single black and white LAPD cruiser was sent to investigate. A single one.
Yeah.
All these heavily armed guys.
Jesus. If only they knew.
And it slowly made its way to Nakatomi Plaza. And the bad guys knew that the mystery man was on the roof to make the emergency call because they'd overheard him on their radio.
Oh, that's right, because he's using the same frequency.
Yeah, exactly. Carl was going to get his chance for revenge on the man who'd killed his brother, and we'll take a break right here. And we're back. So LAPD dispatchers assume McLean's call was a prank.
Yeah.
Sad.
It's.
The police officer sent to investigate was Officer Al Powell.
Oh, yeah.
He'd been buying Twinkies at a nearby convenience store when he was contacted by dispatch to respond.
Like, you think that's just a joke? You think that that's just cliche? But he was literally buying Twinkies.
Yeah. He'd lost his confidence and had been a desk jockey for a number of years on the police force since accidentally shooting an innocent 13-year-old who had pointed a toy gun at him.
Oh my God, there's still so much relevance in this story to current times.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Powell later intimated, quote, and I spoke to him about this.
Okay.
"You know, when you're a rookie, they can teach you everything about being a cop except how to live with a mistake. Anyway, I couldn't bring myself to drop my gun on anybody again," end quote.
Yeah. This sounds like a good man who made a mistake and has a conscience.
Well, can you imagine this poor guy today? You shoot a kid as a rookie, and with social media, he would be shamed into...
Yep, for sure.
But here we are. Like, here's a police officer who felt terrible about the mistake that he'd made.
Yeah.
You know, he'd repented for it by sitting behind a desk for any number of years. I mean, the man was in his 40s, so he had to have been a police officer.
If he was a rookie,
quite some time, yeah. As Al headed for the tower, Carl and another couple of bad guys discovered John McClane at the roof. And a gunfight ensues.
Oh, God.
And McClane escaped with cuts and bruises and found himself in an elevator shaft where, in an effort to lower himself down to a lower floor, he lost his MP5.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And he nearly fell down the shaft.
Holy shit.
Yeah, he had to reach out and grab the bypassing opening, which was another duct.
Fuck, you only see that kind of stuff in the movies. Jesus.
Absolutely. And he climbed into this ductwork in the ceiling and used his Zippo lighter for light.
Oh, well, see?
Yeah, so thank goodness that he'd found that Zippo.
Always loot bodies.
Yeah.
And video games have taught me that.
And Carl, though, saw the glow of the lighter as he peered down into the unused elevator shaft. He knew where this guy was, so Carl's angry, wants to kill John McClane, and he made his way back down to that lower floor to dispatch his prey. And he began firing into the ductwork, almost killing McClane.
Holy shit.
Some of the bullets came very close.
Holy
but
shit.
Before he could find McClane,
yeah.
he was called back to the party by his boss, Hans. The boss calls, this has got to wait. I mean, where's John McClane going to go, really?
Yeah, but the man just killed your brother. Like, I'm not trying to take the side of the terrorist here, but, I mean, he did just kill you. If it was me, I'd be, you listening, Jimmy? If it was me, I would just be like, I don't care, I'm killing this man first.
Fair enough.
Either he's got, I mean, he knows who his boss is.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's, you know, he's able to separate mission from emotion.
McClane made his way back to one of the empty floors with a boardroom where he looked out a window and saw Powell's LAPD black and white near the entrance.
I'd be thinking, like, just where can I nap at this point?
God. But Powell, however, was inside being convinced by a fake security guard that everything was okay.
Not noticing the bodies that must have been lying
somewhere.
Well,
I'm sure they hid those.
For sure, but it's just like there's something I get uneasy when thinking like that. Officers there just not knowing what might be around the
corner.
They
might have been in the supply closet or something. Yeah, who knows?
Just feet away and he's just,
Two bad guys found McClane as he was pounding on the window trying to get the attention of Officer Powell who was radioing in. That everything was just fine.
Yeah.
McClane shot both of the men dead with his service weapon.
Son of a bitch.
Wow. You know, they've got MP5s, and he's able to take them both out with his pistol. He loots the dead guys.
That's what I'm talking about.
Gets another MP5 and another duffel bag, but this one is full of military-grade C4 plastic explosives,
holy shit,
detonators, and blasting caps.
These guys came prepared.
Right?
Holy Christ. Rocket launchers and C4.
The dead men's shoes are still too small for John McClane, even though they were much taller than him, which is rather odd.
And you hate to say it, but it's getting comical at this point.
Yeah.
This poor guy, just get him some damn shoes.
Exactly. In a desperate final attempt to get Powell's attention, John McClane shot out a window in the boardroom where he was.
Yeah.
And threw one of the corpses of the dead men he'd just killed out.
What?
The body landed heavily on the hood of Powell's cruiser and broke the windshield. The man's head went right through the windshield.
Are you shitting me?
I am not.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I don't remember hearing that at all. You would think that, wow.
Yeah, so Al's crapping his pants.
And good aim.
Yeah, and at the exact same moment, one of the bad guys opened up on Powell's car from a lower floor with an M60 heavy machine gun.
What? Armies aren't this well armed.
Some.
Wow.
Powell, who was terrified and cursing, jammed his car into reverse as it was riddled with bullets.
Wow. This poor guy.
McClane recalled in his autobiography, yelling out the window to the cop, "Welcome to the party, pal."
I mean, this McClane's got balls of steel.
I guess so.
Like, my God, like, he even has his, like, comedic wits about him throughout all of this.
The cop car crashed over a concrete barrier out of the line of fire, and Powell escaped without injury.
Oh,
thank goodness.
Thank God. I'm rooting for this guy.
And although he was shaken up, Powell stuck around waiting for the cavalry. He was calling, like, get me out of here. But interestingly, even with all the gunfire and all that kind of stuff going on, Argyle, the limo driver, heard nothing. He was listening to really loud hippity-hop music in the limo.
Oh, my God. totally forgot about Argyle.
The hippity hop.
Yeah, the hippity hop, as the kids like to say.
Mm-hmm.
When he's not listening to the hippity hop, he likes to chill his dope white grip.
It was the 80s after all. Yeah. The LAPD black and whites began to show up because Powell had been screaming for backup.
Mm-hmm.
But news reporters who had been listening to their police scanners also heard of the events and started heading toward the towers.
Oh, yeah, they'd eat the shit.
You know, the stringers, all those scumbags who hang around.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you've seen Nightcrawler.
I have loved it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic movie, but that's a scary individual.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're not all like that. But,
well, have you watched that Netflix show?
Yeah, some of them were like that.
Yeah.
All of this is going according to Gruber's plan. Even the police arriving was what he wanted. Yeah,
for real. But that makes sense then why they're so well armed.
Well, you'll see why Gruber wanted the police there in a bit.
Hmm.
At this point, a conversation between Gruber and McLean took place over the radio. Gruber was trying to figure out who McLean was, and McLean was being cagey.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a portion of the conversation that was recorded and later transcribed for the inquest into these events.
Okay.
I'll be Hans Gruber.
Oh, okay. We got to. Okay, I got to do some voice acting here.
And Scott will be McLean.
Damn right I am.
You know my name. I don't know yours. Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really liked those sequin shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you hear? Did you think for a minute McLean was here?
No, I did not.
Oh, shit.
Okay, no, I did not.
I felt it.
But he said, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from.
Well, I'm sure he wasn't the creator
well,
of it.
Well, I'm sure he's, but yippee-ki-yay, I'm sure was not his, but I'm sure he added the motherfucker at the end.
Because like, that's like, you hear people with that all the time. And typically when it's like a dangerous situation. So yeah, without a doubt.
That's definitely from the Nakatomi incident.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, funny, hey?
Yeah. Well, probably not to Hans in that moment.
No. News reports began to get out about the story that was unfolding at Nakatomi Plaza as Powell and McLean were communicating over the radio.
Well, and also gunfire.
Yeah.
And stuff like this.
People
have got to be like peering out their windows. Oh, what's going on?
Exactly. McLean wouldn't give his name to the police, but Powell began to think he may be a cop.
Mm.
Hans gleefully watched the TV news of his heist on a portable TV in Holly's empty office that he was using for his headquarters.
Did you hear that? His portable TV. He didn't just pull out his iPhone.
No, they had like a box TV that they pulled out and pulled up the antenna.
With tubes and all.
All of that kind of crap in it. Argyle overheard the news of the events between rap songs.
Oh, okay. So
radio.
Now he's starting to kind of...
So he clued in.
Yeah.
And he turned his CB/police scanner on in the vehicle and heard some of the chatter.
Yeah.
So, realizing he might be in danger, he tried to leave, but couldn't get his car out of the parking garage. It was locked down by bad guys.
What a emotional roller coaster for Argyle. It's like imagine that he starts the day off very nervous. Oh, new first day on the job. Yeah. I hope I don't screw it up. Then he goes and he gets his first customer and he's like, this is going great. I'm really enjoying this. And then it's like, I'll just chill out in the back. What a sweet gig I have. Oh my God, I might die. I've got to run away.
Exactly. The SWAT team arrived. And they began to make their way to the building on foot.
Yeah.
But they were seen by the hacker, Theo.
Nerd.
He was still working on the locks, but he was also monitoring the security cameras on his computer.
Mm.
The bad guys shot and badly injured the LAPD SWAT team members who were making their way to the building.
These aren't the guys you want to piss off, SWAT, in my opinion.
A LAPD SWAT tank was also blown up by rocket launchers at Hans' orders.
Holy shit. So he really was planned?
Oh, like, my God. Like they were shooting out the spotlights and all that kind of stuff the police were shining on the building.
Jesus Christ.
Terrible. McLean decided now is the time he needs to use the C4 that he's found.
Yeah.
So he wired it to a chair inside a broken computer monitor. So one of those big CRT monitors.
Yeah.
And then he tossed the whole bomb down an elevator shaft.
Okay.
Luckily, the explosion took out the two guys with the rocket launcher, saving many lives in the process.
Wow. You know what words I've never said? Time for me to use this C4 and detonators.
Yeah, right?
That's not, I've never, that, and I hope won't ever. It's time for me to use these, the C4 and detonators.
At this point, John McClane had single-handedly taken out 5 of the bad guys.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. And also, where's my rocket launcher? I've never said those words.
Exactly. The ensuing explosion was so massive, it damaged those lower floors of the building extensively.
Yeah, yeah.
The LAPD's deputy chief of police berated McClane over the radio for his recklessness.
I don't know. I kind of get both sides. If I'm that officer, I would. If I'm the chief of police, I would definitely be like, okay, like this dude's reckless. He might cause more injury and damage than anything else. But in the same vein, it's like,
isn't he your best hope? There's someone on the inside. You have at least one person on the inside.
I can't imagine a stuffy chief of police feeling that way. But yeah, if I'm like one of the people held hostage in there, I'm like, yeah, give us more McClane.
Exactly.
Send in more McClanes.
So most likely not thinking straight from all the cocaine he'd been sniffing, mm-hmm. Holly's co-worker, Ellis Lowe,
this guy again,
gave Gruber John McClane's real name.
No.
And asked John to give Gruber back his detonators to save everybody. Ellis was still trying to protect Holly's real identity as McClane's wife, but miscalculated his own worth. Well, Gruber shot Ellis between the eyes and coldly threatened to shoot more hostages if McClane did not give over the detonators, and John again refused.
Yeah, I mean, Ellis was a victim, and he didn't ask to be there, and he got killed.
But it was dumb to do what he did.
But also,
yeah,
he was a dick.
Yeah, true.
So I'm conflicted, Mike.
Buying Theo more time to get to the last lock in the vault, Gruber talked to police, making demands for the release of political prisoners from around the world, as well as helicopters to get him and his men and the hostages to safety. As is protocol, in a terrorist situation, the FBI was called. Two FBI agents named Johnson and Johnson soon arrived to take over the negotiations.
For real, Johnson and Johnson?
Yeah, that was their real names.
My God.
Gruber then went to check on the status of the explosives himself near the roof, and for some reason left his own pistol behind near a stairwell.
Oh, and no. You don't do that, Gruber.
I don't know why he would do that.
Well, he's getting overconfident, probably.
Yeah. Then he ran into the bloody and bruised, barefoot, heavily armed John McClane.
Oh, my God.
So he had to think fast.
Yeah.
Gruber put on an American accent, claiming to be one of the hostages.
Okay, tough call for John to...
According to John McClane's later testimony at the inquest...
Yeah.
McClane handed Gruber his Beretta. Gruber, who thought he'd fooled McClane, pointed the weapon at McClane and asked for the detonators back.
Yeah.
John refused, and Gruber attempted to shoot McClane, but found the gun was unloaded. John was now sure of who he was dealing with. It was McClane who'd fooled Gruber.
Holy shit!
As John was about to take control, Carl and two more of the bad guys arrived to back up Gruber.
Holy shit. You couldn't script this.
Right.
Like, holy shit.
A gunfight ensues.
Yeah.
And submachine gun fire from John McClane and Gruber's thugs shattered glass all over the mechanical floor that they were on.
Oh, God. I know where this is going.
Two bad guys were shot and killed by McClane in the fracas. McClane, so that's 7 now that he's killed.
Whew.
McClane later recalled overhearing Gruber ordering Carl to shoot out more of the glass around the floor.
Yeah, that's smart. I mean,
John knew this was to keep him pinned down in his bare feet.
Yeah.
But Gruber had underestimated the courage of this resourceful cop, and John ran for an exit through the glass when Gruber and Carl were ducking for cover.
Holy shit, that was tough. Yeah, this is who I wish I could be.
Well, John made his way down to another floor where he spent time picking shards of glass, like huge shards of glass, out of his bloody, awfully bloody feet. And he'd lost so much blood, he thought he was done for.
Yeah.
And he was asking Powell over the radio to apologize to his wife for him, but still not letting on that she was there at the party.
Yeah. And, you know, you wonder, like, how can the story even continue and stuff? But I guess adrenaline.
Right.
Like, you know, I broke my leg and I couldn't feel any pain until after the adrenaline wore off.
Exactly.
And so it's a hell of a drug, that adrenaline.
Yeah. John, sadly, had left the detonators behind because he was unable to retrieve that bag that he had.
Yeah, he's just running to live.
He couldn't get them because they're heavy fire, right?
Yeah, he's just trying to live.
Exactly. So Gruber and Carl found the detonators and made their way back to the vault where Theo and the last remaining thug were working. Theo was down to that last lock.
Mm.
It was an electromagnetic time lock.
Oh, that sounds fancy.
Right? The FBI, playing by their own rule book and thinking they were simply dealing with a terrorist event, cut the power to the plaza.
Okay.
Without power, the last electronic lock disengaged, opening the vault for Gruber and his men as they loaded up bags full of those bearer bonds worth $640 million.
Holy shit, you would have thought they would have had a redundant backup power source.
But apparently not.
Holy shit.
The FBI then let Gruber know that the choppers were on their way, and in fact, they'd called for air support.
Oh my God.
Choppers full of armed people.
Yeah.
Hans was overheard saying, quote, "They touch down, we blow the roof, they spend a month sifting through the rubble, and by the time they figure out what went wrong, we'll be sitting on a beach earning 20%, end quote.
Okay, I just kind of chuckled at that.
What a dirtbag.
Yeah.
McLean made his way to the roof and found it wired to explode.
Woo!
He tried to let the police know, but was discovered by Carl before he could make sense of it. So here comes Carl again in the elevator.
Man.
And Carl and John fought.
Yeah.
Carl even got John McClane's Beretta away from him, and as John was running from him, John was shot in the shoulder.
Oh, my God.
So he's been shot.
How can I not remember that he was shot? You would think that would be something that sticks in the
holy shit.
Yeah,
as he went through a doorway into a stairwell, he was shot in the right shoulder.
My God.
Yep. Even wounded, though, as the two men fought, because Carl chased him and John again got the jump on him, John ended up stringing Carl up near a turbine via some chain. So he thought Carl was dead.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would. And
Carl looked pretty much dead. Meanwhile, Gruber was rounding up hostages. Thanks to a nosy reporter's live feed from Holly Gennaro's home with her children.
Oh, no.
Gruber found out that Holly was McLean's wife and singled her out of the crowd for insurance. What a dickhead.
Oh, God.
Like, this guy. So here's what this guy did to get into their home. He threatened their maid with immigration.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding.
You know, especially in the 80s, you'd hear a lot about those gotcha journalists.
Yeah.
You'd hear a lot about the tabloid journalists.
This guy was
and stuff
one of
like,
those.
He
was a rat-faced looking turd.
He exemplifies that. Oh, my God. There's another one. Probably has one of those punch-me faces. Too.
Totally he does. The remaining hostages were ushered to the roof by a guard at gunpoint. Having done away with Carl, McLean went to the roof and shot the guard. He was thinking that his wife is going to be up there, but there's no Gruber. The other guys who were with him are missing. So it clicks in John's mind what the explosives are for. They're going to blow up the roof and the hostages with them and then make their real getaway.
Yeah.
So he orders all the hostages off the roof,
okay,
calling to let people know, like, something's going on here.
Yeah.
He even had to fire his weapon to scare the hostages back into the stairwell. But the FBI was arriving with their helicopters and fired on John, thinking he was a bad guy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because they thought that he was firing at them. So he's pinned down by
God,
FBI firing out of their helicopters.
Holy shit.
So to escape, he had to tie a fire hose around his waist and swing down to a lower floor just as Gruber blows the explosives on the roof in a spectacular fashion. This later cost millions of dollars to repair.
Yeah, no kidding.
Two FBI helicopters were destroyed with all occupants inside perishing in the crash.
Oh my God.
A memorial was later placed nearby commemorating the heroism of the brave agents who died in the crash, including Johnson & Johnson, the two lead FBI negotiators.
Yeah, oh my God. So a lot of collateral damage.
Right?
Yeah.
So here's John swinging from this fire hose outside the building, and he had to shoot out a window and crash through it to relative safety. I don't know about this one, though. This comes from his own testimony and his autobiography, but It's been questioned by many and put to the test and debunked by Mythbusters as impossible.
What, shooting out a window?
Yeah, so shooting out a window and then going through it with your bare feet.
Yeah.
The Mythbusters actually did an entire episode on
really?
This.
And they couldn't yeah. they couldn't replicate it?
They couldn't replicate it.
But, you know, the one thing that they were probably missing is adrenaline in that heat of the moment. Like, people can lift up cars.
Lots of things can happen.
You know, yeah. and so that's a component that you just can't. And when you know your life is actually
yeah.
on the line.
So Mythbusters speculated that he had to have gotten down another way. But as there is no security cameras on the roof or near the window, it's unknown for sure. But the fire hose was later found exactly where John said it would have been.
I'm going to believe John McClane.
In the parking garage, Argyle noticed an ambulance being driven out of the bad guy's truck by Theo, the hacker. So Theo is in the truck again. And they had an ambulance in there the whole time.
That's crazy.
This was their actual means of escape. This was how they were really going to get away. Shit. So
thus wanting.
All these bodies everywhere. Yeah. You can't determine who's who because of all that. And
if it's an authentic looking ambulance,
drive away in an LA County ambulance.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing?
That was pretty resourceful.
Yeah. Argyle, though, heroically used a limo to crash into the ambulance and killed Theo.
What a first day.
Right?
Jesus Christ.
He later received a commendation from the city for his bravery.
Yeah.
And he got some cash from the Nakatomi Corporation.
Oh, good.
And he was awarded that, and it allowed him to open a steakhouse in Los Angeles.
Well, son of a bitch, really?
Right, so Argyle Steakhouse, that's his.
Holy crap.
Isn't that amazing?
I had no idea.
Yep.
Wow.
So next time I go to LA, I'm going to drop in there. I'd love to meet Argyle and shake his hand.
Yeah, and do you think he'd be there?
I hope possibly.
We can call ahead.
Yeah. Luckily, McClane had landed on the same floor that the vault was on where Gruber and Holly were.
You've got to
thank goodness.
Wow.
And John snuck up on them. Gruber, though, once John announced himself, put his gun to Holly's head and ordered McClane to drop his weapon or watch his wife get shot in the head. And we know this guy is like pretty trigger happy.
Yeah. Clearly, he's got no qualms about killing anybody.
So according to both John and Holly, John dropped his MP5 and began to laugh.
What?
Which distracted Hans and the other bad guy that was there with him.
It's distracting me. Yeah, that sounds like a crazy reaction.
John then pulled out his Beretta that he'd taped behind his back and used his last two bullets to shoot the last bad guy in the forehead and hit Gruber in the chest.
My God. He is just the most resourceful.
He's an amazing
guy. Almost like a real-life MacGyver.
Gruber stumbled backwards and crashed through the plate glass window. Somehow, as he was falling, he managed to grab Holly's arm.
Oh, shit.
And he snagged her wristwatch, her Rolex wristwatch to hold on.
Holy shit.
John ran to Holly's side and released the clasp, allowing Gruber to fall the 30 floors to his death below.
I bet you, and I'm not saying this about John in a negative way, I bet you he got a lot of enjoyment just watching Hans drop down after seeing everything he saw.
For sure.
I'm sure, like, I know I would enjoy and get some satisfaction out of watching him plummet those 30 floors.
Well, can you imagine though the people outside?
I know the
deputy chief of police commented, "Oh, I hope that isn't a hostage."
Well, yeah. If I was John, that's not the perspective I would be thinking of. I would just be thinking, you son of a bitch, you just tried to kill my wife. You caused all of this.
Yeah.
My feetses are all cut up.
So John McClane and Holly made their way out of the building to safety. And there they met Officer Powell. As John and Powell greeted each other, Carl, the last bad guy, emerged from the building with his gun. Yeah. And he pointed it at John and Holly.
Yeah.
But before he could pull the trigger, Officer Powell reacted so quickly.
Holy shit.
Carl dead with his revolver, having drawn his weapon for the first time since he'd accidentally killed the child when he was a rookie.
Wow, what a juxtaposition in shootings.
Right?
Wow.
Officer Powell later received a promotion and a high commendation for his actions that
year. Yeah, and I hope a Bentley or something. Like, that's pretty amazing.
The reporter who'd outed John and Holly callously using their children for ratings was also at the scene at the time. Holly recognized the man and walked up to him, punched him in the face, and broke his nose.
That's something. Whatever they're drinking in that McLean household, something's in that water, because they're both pretty badass.
This reporter actually had the chutzpah later on, the nuts, to sue Holly and requested a restraining order from the diminutive little woman.
Fuck this guy.
Right. Argyle and his limo somehow got free of the parking garage, and he kept his promise to drive John and Holly home.
I thought he crashed it into the ambulance.
It was still drivable.
Holy.
Yeah.
Let's give some praise to that limo, too, then.
The inquest was expensive, but in the end, John McClane was cleared of any wrongdoing and lauded as a hero by the city of Los Angeles.
I remember that celebration.
Yeah. He did go on to get into a few more similar scrapes.
Mm-hmm.
One in particular was with Simon, who was the brother of Hans Gruber.
Oh, my God. I didn't...
But you guys can look that up for yourself.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's the end of that story. What a tale.
Fuck. Yeah, I really hope they make a movie about this someday, because that's got
everything. You would think it would make it a pretty excellent
movie.
It's
got everything you need in it.
And it happened on Christmas Eve, so I thought that's, why we should.
No, it's a perfect, we get an away game in there, and this is as Christmassy as it can be, because the day before Christmas.
Right? It's happening on Christmas Eve. What a Christmas gift to John McClane to actually be able to drive off with his wife. They did later on end up getting divorced.
Yeah.
But
and I bet you Christmas was just spent him soaking his bloody feet in water.
You would think that he would have been sent to the hospital.
Yeah.
And also,
he was shot too, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm also curious why Argyle got to drive off, because wouldn't the police want to have a conversation with him?
I never thought about that. Yeah, you would think the police would be like,
okay, you've driven into some.
We need your
you
statement.
Yeah.
We're going to need your statement.
Right.
And how do they not know that he wasn't, him and John McClane weren't the terrorists?
Exactly.
And they've got this $600 million in the back of the limo.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like I said, there was the inquest. All this came out at the inquest, and I'm sure that some of the police officers there got spankings afterward.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. You bet they did.
Yeah, you bet.
Jesus Christ.
So there you go. That's it for our Christmas episode. Let's move on to some voicemails.
Ooh,
we've got some really good ones.
Oh, do we?
This week. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, some folks were kind enough to send us some voicemails. There were so many, actually, I had to really do some picking and choosing. And I'm saving some for the new year when we do our next episode.
Oh, good, good, yeah.
Because who knows if a bunch of people are actually going to call over Christmas time. So
yes, true.
So some I'm sure will end up being in a future episode. So don't be too disappointed if you haven't heard yours yet. So first up, just so you know, we want to mention again that we have a toll-free number that you can call.
Yeah.
It's 1-877-327-5786 or 1-877-DARK-PTN. Ha, 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 right?
Dark Putin.
Dark Putin or Dark Putin. Yeah, Dark Putin's pretty dark.
Totes.
But yeah, so first up, we have Dave from Victoria, British Columbia.
Dave from Victoria.
Yeah, let's hear Dave.
Merry Christmas. I just wanted to say I love listening to your podcast. Big fan of Mike and the Sidekick. Scout, I think it is. This is David from Victoria, BC, and I hope you guys keep it up and keep doing a great job. Thanks for all the content.
Scout.
Yeah.
That's a new one.
Yeah, from Brian from Victoria.
His name is David.
Oh, well, was it now?
Okay.
Scout.
And remember last episode, we talked about the bee's knees and where that came from.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Well, our friend Amanda from St. Louis, who we met at CrimeCon.
Yeah, she's great.
She knows her bees.
Oh, my God.
Like, really knows her bees. she actually does some scientific work with bees.
Wow.
So she sent us voicemail.
Okay.
To let us know where the phrase, the bee's knees, comes from.
This is going to be educational.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott and Mike. I just listened to your episode where you asked what the phrase, the bee's knees, is in reference to, and I thought I could help shed some light on that. So bees collect pollen on their knees, and when they do, they get these little kind of knobby knees that are insanely cute. Usually the pollen is reflective of the color of the flower that they're on, so sometimes they're like pink little knees or like yellow knees or orange knees. So that's where that phrase comes from. I love your show. Super excited to see you guys in Orlando. And yeah, this is Amanda from St. Louis. So, okay, cool. See ya.
Thank you so much, Amanda. That's awesome.
It was just
now we know the bees.
First off, it's just great to hear from Amanda.
She's really
awesome. And that I did not know any of that, and now it's beautiful.
Yeah,
little bee's knees, the bees pollen knees all over them.
Little cute little bee's knees.
Oh my goodness!
And next up, we have a call from Saskatchewan.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey guys, my name is Alex. I'm from Saskatchewan. I just wanted to let you know that you guys are on a great podcast. All the content's presented in a very easily listenable way. Being from Saskatchewan, I do notice that you have a bit of a lack of true crime occurrences that have happened here. One notable one was a nurse who was found murdered by the riverbank in Saskatoon, which is a 50-year-old case that still has been unsolved. I know you guys don't really dive into unsolved stuff, but might be a cool deep dive and maybe present some new information in the case. So keep rocking. Great job. Bye.
Thank you so much. We know that we are lacking in Saskatchewanese content, but we are trying to remedy that. We're trying to do more more shows from different places. So, so Saskatchewan is definitely on the list in the new year. And the case that you're referencing to, I know very well.
Mm.
And I am interested in having one of the people who was accused, perhaps, of that crime on the show.
Wow.
People will Google it, and a lot of people will know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. So, yes, we absolutely would like to cover that case at some point. It is on our list 100%. So,
wow.
Yes.
Great.
You will hear more Saskatchewan content. Yes, and thank you. And last, as far as voicemails go, is our friend Madison. Remember Madison from Ontario?
Toronto?
Yes. Yeah. Let's hear from Madison.
Hi, Mike and Scott. It's Madison from Toronto, the one who did the dark poutine drawing. I just wanted to thank you guys for giving me lots of jokes and fun and entertainment and spooky stories for yet another year. I just wanted to wish you a happy holiday season, happy new year, enjoy it, lots of love. Bye.
Thank you, Madison.
Oh, Madison.
So sweet.
What a talented artist.
Absolutely talented.
From photography to drawing, create art is just, she's a brilliant artist.
So again, it's nice to hear from people who we know, and it's also nice to hear from people who we don't know.
Yeah, this was a hodgepodge.
Give us a call, 1-877-327-5786, or again, 1-877-DARKPTN.
That's right. Wow. Well, I enjoyed those.
Yeah.
Huh.
So now it's time for our Patreon shoutouts.
Oh, is it? Is it that time? Okay, let's do it.
So first up, we have Pamela from Vancouver.
Interesting. I know a Pamela from Vancouver.
I do,
too. How many could there be?
There's probably a few.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the same one, though, because she didn't leave her last name, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, if it's you, Pam.
Thank you, Pamela.
Hi.
There you go. And next up, we have Patty Willick.
Okay. Yeah. Good old Patty Willick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, you look at like, you don't.
No, I don't know where information she's from. No, she didn't leave any information.
Oh, no Patty information. Yeah, Patty is from, of course you're good. I know what you're thinking. Oh, you're, no, Mike. No, Not everybody named Patty's from Ireland.
Okay. No. Oh, is her sister Patty O'Lantern?
Oh, my God.
Or it could be a he Patty, because, you know, Patrick is sometimes Patty.
It could be.
So let, or it's a they. So Patty.
Yes, Patty.
Patty is from...
Patty is from Ireland. No. No, oh. Not. That's what I was saying.
Okay.
You, that's where I knew your mind would go instantly to Ireland.
Patio furniture?
Patio furniture. No, that, no, not at all. Patty is from Papua New Guinea.
Oh, Papua New Guinea. Very interesting. Yeah. What does she do in Papua New Guinea? Nice climate there.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful climate, which makes her job more unusual.
Okay.
But she's a Zamboni driver.
There's hockey rinks in Papua New Guinea?
I have to guess. Yes.
Or is she, again, unemployed?
No.
As many of our listeners are who have weird jobs in other...
No. Patty's flourishing. There must be. I mean, they have hockey rinks in Saudi Arabia. So
not many.
But yet... there's a Zamboni driver in Saudi Arabia,
sure.
So why not Papua New Guinea? Patty is got to be living the life.
Living the life.
You just go Zamboni and
do they get paid well in Papua? The Zamboni drivers get paid well.
Yeah, they get
good for
great.
Her. Good for you, Patty.
They get paid great.
Good enough for her to be able to support us on Patreon.
Yeah, and enjoy, you know, Zamboni by day, beach by later day.
So next up, we have Buzz Buzz, a.k.a. Sarah Cowan, from Vancouver.
Oh, wow.
Another Vancouverite.
Buzz Buzz.
Buzz Buzz.
Thanks, Sarah.
Then we have Ellen Cooper from Harrietville in Australia. And I'm sure she's a nice lady.
Yeah, bedwetter,
nice
maybe.
Nice lady.
Maybe a bedwetter.
She may be a bedwetter. Is she hanging in her water box? Gone?
Yes.
Okay. Next up, Nadia Blythe.
Yeah. Nadia Blythe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, from Fort St. John.
Oh,
yeah.
Here in BC.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does she do in Fort St. John?
Build forts.
Oh, she's a fort builder in the fort.
For St. John's Ambulance.
Wow, that is crazy.
It really is
that
crazy.
That is so meta. Like, my brain is actually starting to leak out.
Yeah, there's inception-y.
Wow, you did just inception me pretty bad.
I did. So it's really, that's the only place where you could be a fort builder for St. John's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Michael Davis.
Good old Michael Davis. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Michael doesn't like to talk specifically about where he's from because this is an alias.
Okay.
And I know this because Michael gave me a heads up that this is an alias. Michael is really a very famous actor.
Okay, and where does he live?
Well, I can't, it's somewhere.
Or just, is it California?
It's in that area.
Is it like sort of the lower end of California, not in San Francisco and not in San Diego, but kind of mushed in between sort of. There's like two.
There may be a giant sign.
And an L and an A.
I cannot confirm nor deny that.
What have we seen him in?
I can give you a line from one of his movies.
Okay.
What's in the box?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Michael Davis.
Yeah,
AKA
Michael Davis.
AKA Brad Pitt.
Yep.
I blew up.
Mike.
Spot.
Mike.
Shit.
You son of a bitch.
Roxanne Franklin from Yorkton, Saskatchewan. She doesn't have to turn on the red light, and neither do we, because she's helping us on the Patreon.
And I'm sure that's the first time she's ever heard that joke, so you're welcome, Roxanne.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And Helen Watson from Edinburgh, Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure she likes it when I do the wee things about my grandmother.
She probably gets a great kick out of it.
Well, some people that are offended by me Scottish accent.
Cowards, that's who.
Yeah, I don't know. But I am partially. I do belong to that.
I think your accent is stellar.
Yeah, well, I didn't do a very good German accent in the show.
Yeah, it was Russian.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah, it's just a podcast.
But thank you, Helen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lee Helen.
Next up, we have Jeffrey Kramer.
Yeah.
He came in at $50.
Holy crap.
Which is double our PM.
Jeffrey.
Wow. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Wow.
But he didn't leave any other info, so we still don't know where he's from. But he did give us some donut money because he felt we deserved it.
Double dutied?
No, he gave us donut money. He gave us another $50 worth of donut money because I set up a $50 Patreon account. Yeah. I couldn't figure out how to set it to occur on the 15th. Anyway, the payments will start on January 1st. You seriously deserve it. Thanks for keeping me laughing and having trouble sleeping every week. In the meantime, here's a bit of poutine money or new toque money. That's what I would use it for. Jeffrey.
Wow.
I think Jeffrey is from one of the coolest places on the planet, a.k.a. Antarctica.
Most likely.
And
because he thus may, the toque comment.
Yeah, he may be working in that outpost where the thing happened.
Mm.
Ooh, with Kurt Russell. Oh, my God. Maybe he's the thing. No, he just gathers ice cores there.
Oh, sure. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So thank you, Jeffrey Kramer. Thank you so much.
That's really ridiculous.
Thank you. It is amazing.
Wow, Jeffrey.
Irene Briand, who sent us donut money last week and didn't send us a message, sent more donut money with a message this week.
Well, you didn't have to send more money, but great, thank you.
So she said, hi, I didn't see this before, so here is some donut money for you, Mike, and Scott, and Carol and Joanne, but mostly Bibby and Violet.
Oh!
Love the podcast, been listening since day one. Keep up the great work. And I thought that would be the perfect one to end on. For
my God, that was perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and she had like a little huggy face and an emoji for the heart and then a Christmas tree. So thank you, Irene.
I will tell my little girls.
Oh, they'll be so pleased.
That's so sweet of you, Irene. Thank you.
So thank you so much to our patrons, past and present, for your pledges. We treat them like presents.
They're
we really appreciate your support of the show. Thank you to anybody who supported us with donut money. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you want to help support us, you can do so at patreon.com/darkpoutine, or for one-time support, you can send us donut money via PayPal at our email address, darkpoutinepodcast@gmail.com. If you don't already, it would mean a lot to us if you subscribe to the show. You can easily find us on iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, or wherever you get your on-demand audio.
Wherever.
Check out our website, darkpoutine.com, for show notes and other cool stuff. I had some pictures last week of the perpetrator and his family.
Yeah, I saw some people sharing, and they weren't very pleased with what's
no,
his
No, they weren't pleased
nuts.
With him. Yeah. So please give us a like on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for Dark Poutine. Mm-hmm. Come on to the Yumber Yard. Join us there.
Mm-hmm.
We're at about 6,100 members there now. Most importantly, though, tell your friends about us. Word of mouth is a powerful thing. Until next year, yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Woo-hoo. We're taking a break for a week. We've deserved it.
We do.
And so have you.
Yeah.
We wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, or whatever holiday you choose to celebrate, you have a happy one.
Much love.
Don't forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Ho, ho, ho.
So Christmassy.